Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased to welcome back Shelley Ryan. Shelley is host and producer of The Wisconsin Gardener on Wisconsin Public Television, and she's also the driving force here behind the Wisconsin Public Television annual Garden Expo, taking place Friday, February 12th through Sunday, February 14th. We'll talk about the specifics of Garden Expo, certainly, as we go along today. And we will also answer your gardening questions as best we can. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And just to get started on Garden Expo, we should mention that there are some tickets available for at least 10 people.
At least 10.
And 10 pairs of tickets.
10 pairs. And actually, I was given the word that if those go like gangbusters, we have permission to go even a little further than that.
Oh.
Jim doesn't even know that.
Jim's
going, ah!
Jim's grabbing a pencil and a piece of paper. You bet. If you call in, whoever calls in, we'll just take them in order.
Sure.
Call in with a gardening question or with a question about Garden Expo, and you want a pair of tickets, what we'll do is we will put you on hold after we're finished. Jim will take your name and probably do a will call. Is that how we do it? Or would we mail them?
Oh, hard question. Did Jim have a good idea? Is he nodding? Does he want to do a will call? Or we probably can mail them to him.
All right. We'll straighten that
we'll
out.
We'll work it out.
We'll work that out. Before the end of the show, you'll know how you're going to get your tickets.
Before the expo, we promise.
I promise. That's for sure. Well, now, what about Wisconsin Gardener? What are you up to?
Things are hopping, Larry. First of all, we got 6 new shows starting in March, on March 7th at 5:30. We'll be kicking off our 2010 season.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be during the pledge drive, so I hope people call in and support the Wisconsin Gardener. That's kind of a neat show. I got to talk about just that one for a minute.
Sure.
Because I got a special person on the show. Mm. I have been given permission to visit the gardens of Taliesin.
Oh.
Frank Lloyd Wright's Taliesin. My guest was one of the last surviving members of Frank Lloyd Wright's fellowship.
Oh, my
Frances
goodness.
Frances Nempton. She's 90 years old, sharp as a tack. She has been in charge of the gardens there since the 70s.
Forever, almost.
She had stories that I suspect people have never heard.
Oh,
about
man.
Frank Lloyd Wright, about Taliesin, about the background, about living there, what it was like. So it's what a treat.
Oh,
what
man.
A treat.
Can't wait for that
I can't either, actually. I mean, just to see it again. We're also going to Longenecker Gardens in Madison with Ed Hasselkus, another...
Mm-hmm. Great guy.
Wonderful. Yeah, a grand old man. I mean, mm-hmm. I shouldn't call him an old man. Makes me feel old. He's... You know, when he goes through the arboretum, you try to keep up with him.
Tall and lanky, and he moves fast.
He makes me feel short. And, you know, the Longenecker Gardens has one of the largest collections of lilacs, and we were there when they were in bloom. So it's beautiful. Then we also go to the Flying Pig in Algoma, which is part art gallery, part cafe, and part gardens. Hysterical, beautiful, and funny place. And then a private garden in Green Bay filled with art that's made out of... junk. And I mean, including a half ton elephant. So it's just a wonderful show, a very fun show. But we're going to have shows every month, March, April, May, June, July, and August this year.
Oh, great.
And I think the neatest news, this will be probably the first big public announcement. We've just received a very enormous grant from the Urban Horticulture team.
Woo!
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so that's going to help a great deal keeping the Wisconsin Gardener on the air.
Oh, that's wonderful news. Well, it sounds really exciting. Looking forward to it. And I know we'll talk about Garden Expo coming up in a few minutes. I want to take a few calls, but
yes.
Garden Expo looks pretty exciting, too.
Oh, yeah. There's something for everybody there.
Absolutely, including you and me as well.
Yeah, we should hang out maybe.
Let's go to Norman in Wausau. Norm, thank you for calling. Hello.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention yesterday you had a caller about the wasp and damage on the grapes and what could be done about it. And I have the perfect solution, and I thought our guests today would appreciate this. And it's a thing called maggot barriers. what they are, they look like little nylon, white nylon footies, and they're actually sold to put over the apples when they're small so they don't get maggot damage as they mature. But I found if you put them over your grapes that you can cut your wasp and bird damage down to nearly nothing. I tried them for 2 years now, and out of almost 300 clusters of grapes, I had like only three or four that showed any damage whatsoever, and that was minimal once I start using that. And before this, any of the grapes, when they started getting real ripe, and I don't know if the birds pecked on them first, then the wasps got on them or what, but they literally destroyed the grapes for me. So that is a good thing, and you could, they're very inexpensive. They're made available by this North Olympic Fruit Club out of Port Townsend, Washington. And if anybody's interested, they can go to maggotbarriers@gmail.com. Maggotbarriers@gmail.com. They're very inexpensive. I think $20 for a package of 300 of them. And if you order more, the price goes down. But they really worked. So, Shelley, maybe that's something when people say, well, I hated to spray, you know, the pesticides on there. And then even if they only have a 5 or 7 day wait before you can use them, I just hate to spray them and then eat them, even if you wash them and everything. So this is a possible solution.
Well, and it's great to have something that involves no chemicals whatsoever.
Yeah, Norm, thank you. And it's again, it's maggotbarriers@gmail.com.
Right. And all one word, maggot barriers, and then at Gmail, just G and M-A-I-L.
.com.
Yeah. And I think they'll have the data that you need if you want to order them.
And did you want tickets?
They really worked.
And what about Garden Expo? Are you going to make it to Garden Expo? We'll be glad to give you a pair of tickets.
I would love to, but unfortunately, we have other commitments on the weekend, and I have to stay here in Wausau.
All right. Well, that's all right. I appreciate your call, Norman, and that means we still have at least 10 pairs of tickets to go. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Oh, it's good to start out with a little advice. Let's go to Annabelle in Fort Atkinson. Hi.
Good morning. I don't have any advice. I'm in the market for some. I have had some amaryllis bulbs of various sizes over the years, and I have, at first when I had them, I was able to get them to come back into blossom. I really haven't had any blossoms for several years. Yesterday, I decided it was time to see if they what they would do for this season, and I repotted them. Is there anything else that I can do to encourage them to blossom?
Okay, well, first of all, repotting them every once in a while is a good idea because, you know, the soil doesn't continue to provide them with food. However, that's not going to encourage blossoming. That's just going to keep them healthy. So that was step one. What do you do with them during the summer and the winter?
Well, during the winter, I have just had them resting. I did not take them. I have not been taking them out of the last several summers. But when they started to grow and make leaves, I put the plots as close as I could to a window or windows that have a west exposure.
Okay. This is one of those things that I actually, when I worked at Allen Centennial Gardens many years ago, I worked with Dennis Stimart, who had done some research with amaryllis, and what they actually respond to isn't so much light as drought. What you do is you can put them outside in the summer, leave them in their pots, or you know, pop them right in the ground, which is what I do just because it's less watering. And then in the fall, obviously before frost, which will kill them, you bring them in the house, put them in your basement, put them in a closet, put them somewhere, and don't water them. It is the drought that stimulates the flowering.
Okay, well, I have done that, and I've done that for the last few seasons and have not done anything in terms of fertilizing. Should I do any fertilization when I start to see growth this season?
Well, you're going to stimulate the growth when you bring them out. It sounded kind of like you're letting them start to grow before you bring them out?
I noticed that when I took them out of the other pots and brushed the soil off of them, all of the roots looked like they were starting to grow.
Okay, are you
so they look healthy.
Okay, are you taking them out of the pots every year?
I have not been doing that,
okay.
No.
Okay.
And usually when I did take them out, I submerged pots and all. But I just haven't had blossoms on them for a long time.
You said you submerged the pots in what?
I buried pots and all outside when I did take them out.
Oh, I see.
In the summertime, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was thinking. Okay. That should do the trick. The fact that you repotted them this year, I suspect, is why they're not doing anything this year. But what you're doing the other years is correct. Now you do know, you know, some amaryllis will bloom at different times of year, kind of like Christmas cactus, things like that. So you might want to try bringing them out a lot earlier than you are now. I usually bring what I was taught is you bring them out around Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And then, again, don't put them in direct light right away. What you want to do is put them in like a low light situation first and a little bit of water, and then gradually bring them into more light.
And if you lay on a lot of fertilizer, especially nitrogen, wouldn't you hurt blooming?
Right. You're encouraging leaves, not flowers. Right.
So lay off the nitrogen, fertilizer.
I won't do any of that then, and I'll have to hope for the best, I guess.
Right. This year you're a little late. Fertilize them during the summer when they're outside growing outside or submerged in the pots.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Annabelle. Appreciate it. Savannah and Mazo, we turn to you now. Hi, Savannah.
Hi, Larry and Shelley.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Great.
Good. I just, first of all, had a comment about the Garden Expo. My husband and I start joking that it's a rite of passage for our two little boys.
Oh.
Take them to the Garden Expo every year. And then, secondly, I had a question about new varieties that you see in catalogs that look fantastic. But I've heard comments from other guests on Garden Talk that some of those new varieties don't do very well. Other than trying those out in our yard, is there another way to kind of research and see what ones might be more successful?
Yes, definitely. Two of the places that I look at are the All-America Selection Winners. And they usually have a little shield next to them in catalogs that will say AAS Winner.
Okay.
Those have already been trialed all over the country, including frequently Rotary Gardens, Berner Botanical. So they've been tried even in our growing area. The other place to go and check out is, I'm blanking, the research station on Mineral Point Road.
Oh, right. Yeah, we know where that is.
Yeah.
West Madison Agricultural Research Station. That's it. Because, in fact, they're actually trialing stuff even before it becomes public. So you could walk through there once or twice a year, look at things that interest you, take note of the labels. And anything that's really successful will actually be coming out the following year, so you will have a jump on everybody else.
Great. That'd be fantastic.
And, Savannah, are you going to try to make it to the Garden Expo?
We are, yeah.
Tell you what, we'll give you a pair of tickets.
Great, thank you.
We'll put you on hold, and Jim will get your address and so forth, and we'll go from there.
Great, thanks.
Thanks. All right, so there's a pair of tickets going.
All right, we remembered to ask.
Remember to ask.
Must be Friday.
That. Yeah, if we don't remember to ask, please remind us.
Yes, please.
Let's go to Martha in St. Croix Falls next. Martha, hello.
Hello. I want to thank Shelley for being here so early in the season so we can all get ready for our gardens. I have a large garden area, Shelley, that I'd like to use this year. That there was no garden last year, so it grew over in what was mostly pigweed, which was a shame.
Yeah.
The garden area was used the last few years, so it had some compost and things added, but it wasn't used last year. It's about 100 by 50 feet, so I'd really like to add it in, but I don't know how to start and if I'm going to have continual trouble with the pigweed.
Okay, first of all, are we talking annuals, perennials, or vegetables?
I'd like to do vegetables in that area, like large vining kinds of things, like squash and pumpkin and things that can maybe just
crawl around
in that area. But I'm
kind of rambling.
Rambling, but I'm concerned that I'm going to have trouble with the pigweed.
Are you trying to do this chemically free?
Yes.
Okay. In fact, one of the shows coming up, I met a wonderful, crazy master gardener who doesn't use chemicals at all. But he mulches things. He's like into like 12 inches, 13 inches of mulch.
Okay.
But that's something you would have had to start last fall.
Right. And I didn't inherit this area until now this year. It's covered, of course, now with snow, and all, I can see little, you know, still pieces of all the pigweed that were there.
Well, what you could do a modified version of his, but let me just see. Let me check and make sure when that show is coming on.
Okay, great.
It's the crazy one. I believe it's going to be on. It's going to be on in August, which will be just the right time for you to actually do it. It's called Lasagna Gardening.
Okay.
Where you just layer after layer. So just plan on that for next year.
Okay, good.
But a modified version this year, the minute you can get out there when it's starting to, you know, the snow is gone.
Okay.
Especially if you're going to do pumpkins and vines and things like that.
Yeah.
I would mulch the whole area with like cardboard.
Okay.
Or thick layers of newspaper.
Yeah, I can do that. Okay.
Go steal leaves or get, Olbrich has a fantastic, you know, sale on their leaf mulch.
Okay.
Or just get shredded leaves or grass or, you know, any kind of organic material.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Layer it over that whole mess, you know, 3 to 4 to 5, 6 inches deep.
Okay.
And the idea is that then when you're ready to plant, you're going to have to pull the material away.
Mm-hmm.
It should have killed most of the stuff underneath there.
Sure.
You're going to cut holes out where you're going to make your mounds to plant your vines.
Okay.
And then you're going to let those grow up and basically vine all over this mulched area.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You're going to smother everything.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And then it'll even be better the next year.
Right, because
and
you're going to...
In the fall, then, if I do all the layers, the
right.
lasagna.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Okay, wonderful. Great.
And can Tickets. You make it to Garden Expo?
No, well, I'm going to plan on it next year. If it's the same weekend every year.
And we try to keep it there.
Then I'll plan it for next year.
Excellent.
All right.
We'll see you then.
Yeah, we'll see you then. Probably talk to you next year at the same time, same station. Thanks, Martha. Thank you very much for calling. Shelley Ryan, host and producer of the Wisconsin Gardener on Wisconsin Public Television. Our guest, Jim Packard, our producer on this edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this edition of Garden Talk, Shelley Ryan, our guest, Larry Mealer here. And Shelley, we've got Garden Expo coming up. And there is so much. I really enjoy going to Garden Expo. And I'll be speaking there with Bob Tomisch on Saturday morning at 10. We'll be doing a sort of a Garden Talk show. So everybody who shows up, we've got some prizes, some pretty cool things, I think, for anybody who walks in the door, and then some other prizes. And you can ask your question then if you don't get on today, for example, or something else comes up between now and the 13th. There we are. We'll be there. And you'll be there, of course.
I'll be there either at the booth. I'm actually teaching a workshop this year on how to dye scarves with plants. It is already sold out, so we won't talk about that too much. But if I get a chance, maybe I should stop by, Larry, and cause trouble.
Please come by and cause trouble.
This will be the first year that you and I aren't doing it together. I'm kind of feeling lost here. But
I know it. I felt kind of bad about it. But just come and march right up to the stage, and we'll put you out anyway.
I'm going to stand at the back of the room and make noises. You know, but again, you know, if I can even get to it, there is so much going on. We've got, over 100 free educational seminars. I mean, the price of that ticket gets you into all the exhibits, all of the displays, all the workshop, all the demos, all of the seminars. And then there are a whole bunch of workshops as well. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I mean,
and it's Friday is from 4 to 9, and then Saturday it's from 8 to 6.
That's the long day.
And then Sunday it's 10 to 4. So there is so much going on. And the website, I should tell people about where to go. I think when I did it, I put in Wisconsin Garden Expo, and it popped up.
Well, and the way I remember it is you can go to wpt.org/garden,
okay.
my website, and then there's a big little button that says Garden Expo on it.
Oh, okay.
So
well, then
you
they
know,
can see
you can kill
then
tubers.
They can see your shows then when your shows are coming up and so forth as well.
But you know, here's an example of some of the classes that are free part of the ticket. I mean, on Saturday there's going to be a demo on how to make your own broom. Probably, and I know the guy. I mean, he's great. He's called Little John, and you know, he'd probably even give you some tips on. You might even walk home with one, you know, or half started, but made with broom corn. You know, made the old fashioned way. Doing how to make what do you call it? Worm bins.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in fact, it's Roger Reynolds, my crazy master gardener, my lovely crazy master gardener, who's going to be doing the lasagna gardening on my show. He is a fantastic speaker. I mean, if you want to learn how to do composting with worms, go see this guy. Entertainment, let me tell you. Cooking with seasonal vegetables. Pruning. Things for a great backyard compost. Seed starting 101. This is just on Saturday morning. You know, that's just one list.
And Larry and Bob Tomish.
Oh, of course. Did I forget you? I'm sorry. There we are. There you
10
are.
10 o'clock.
And WIBA is going to be there again. Yeah. They've been with us since the beginning doing a live broadcast.
Yeah.
You know, there are seminars like Learning to Think Like a Bluebird.
Who's doing that one?
Kent Hall from the Bluebird Restoration Association. That's at 6 o'clock on Friday.
So now what, of course, we still have 9 pairs of tickets at least to give away here. But what are tickets normally?
Oh, you always ask me the hard questions. I know they're cheaper if you buy them in advance. And in fact, you can still actually buy them on the website. Right now, in advance, a one-day ticket is $6, $7
at
the door.
Pretty cheap.
Yeah. You do have to pay parking when you get there. Two-day tickets are $10 in advance or at the door. And then a three-day ticket is $15 in advance only online.
Ah.
Or at the door. Children 12 and under are free.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I bring my daughter along. She's only 6.
She's 6 already? Wow.
Yeah. First grader.
So, tickets are online for purchase only until Monday, February 8th. That's this coming Monday.
So,
if you want a price break on the 3-day.
Now's the time to act.
Right.
Dan and Highland will turn to you. Hi, Dan.
Yes, I got a question. In the Farmer's Almanac, you'll see where it says, there's certain times of year you plant according to the moon, and whether it's in the feet of the woman or in the head of the woman. And I'm just wondering if there's any truth to that in planting toward the moon phases or different root crops and the like.
There are people that swear by it.
Yes, there are.
There are people that don't. I think the best way I would tell you to believe in it would be to do it if you'd like, and then keep a log. Did it make a difference for you? You know, I mean, you've got the almanac. They say the best way to become a better gardener for anybody is to keep a really accurate garden journal.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll know. Did you see a difference? Because I can't swear by it.
No, I wouldn't. I never pay any attention to it, to be perfectly honest. But a lot of people, you're exactly right. A lot of people swear by it.
Yes.
I did hear one thing yesterday. If you on the show when I was talking with Phil Pelletieri, we were talking about potato bugs and the problems associated when you have potatoes. And somebody called and said they plant their potatoes really late to get by the insect issues that develop earlier in the season. So they try to plant late. So. For more, you can go back to my show from yesterday. Go online to our website and get all of the details of that. But it was, that certainly wasn't planting by the moon.
No, well, and in fact, a lot of people will say, prune when the knife is sharp. I mean, so in other words, if the moon says plant now, but we've got 6 inches of water on the ground, which one are you going to listen to?
Yeah.
However, again, if you go to my website, which is wpt.org/garden, you can click on extension, and they have regular reports about which insects have been sighted.
That's right.
What the average temperature is, how cool the nights are. That might be a better report to be planting by.
I think that's a good idea. And Dan, are you coming to Garden Expo?
Yes.
Well, I tell you what, you have got a pair of tickets coming. We will put you on hold, and Jim will get your information.
Okay, thank you.
And what a great Valentine's present it would be, because it's going to be February 12th, 13th, and 14th.
That's right. Valentine's Day is February 14th.
That's right. Every year I walk through there with my husband going, you want one of those? You want that? You want that? And he's like, no. Come on, get me off the hook here.
Oh, Denny's probably a pretty easy guy to please.
No, not when it comes to shopping. Me, I'm easy.
Let's go to Carol in Madison. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have a question. I know you answer this question so often, but it seems like I never hear it at the right time. Last year, my husband dug up all of the grass in our backyard to make new planting beds. We're not going to have any lawn back there any longer. And we added a little bit of composted material to that soil before we planted, and then we got lots and lots of leaves from Olbrich.
Yes.
And we spread it all over that area, so we had a good compost base. Now, last fall, I just went out on the curb and brought leaves into my backyard and threw them all over my beds. I didn't pick up the maple leaves and stuff. I used mostly the little leaf linden types, tiny leaves.
Okay.
And I thought perhaps they might compost down themselves over the winter and be good enough to be dug in. But my question is, I'm just not quite sure what to do in the spring. Do I rake those off, or do I dig them in and use them for mulch? Or, you know, how do I proceed?
If you'd have dug them in last fall, that's one thing. But digging them in the spring, would that be an issue, Shelley?
Well, are these chopped leaves, or are these in full size?
I didn't chop them. I didn't have, you know, the ability to chop them. So I thought possibly just picking up the tiny things that, you know, I didn't use maple, which are so sturdy. I used the more fragile type leaves that happen to be around my neighborhood.
Well, it's going to be a judgment call, but generally I would be raking those off because they're not going to be decomposed. But, you know, don't get rid of them. Rake them off, put them someplace in a pile to break down, and, you know, use them throughout the summer as they break down. The problem is that when you're using big leaves or solid leaves, they smother rather than, you know, add organic material back into your soil.
Okay.
You know, they might keep the weeds down over the winter. That's okay, but they're not adding organic material back in.
Well, they will work as mulch. Like after I plant and my plants are up, if I use those for mulch, will that be acceptable then, or do they still need to break down further?
They need to break down a little bit further.
Okay. All right. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And, you're putting those leaves in, you're kind of tying up some nitrogen in the soil, too.
Right, right. Well, and that's why, I mean, you know, in what we do, our last trip around the yard with the mower is mowing over the leaves, cutting them up into small pieces, and then, you know, either piling them somewhere to break down over the winter to use later. Because they still, the leaves at Olbrich are, if you look at, they crumble. They're broken down. Yeah. They're mixed with manure. It's like black gold.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
They make me so jealous.
Oh, and Carol, are you still there?
That Olbrich. Summer, it was just outrageous. So I was trying to avoid some of that cost. But.
Well, I would like to have Jeff Epping on, and he has agreed to doing this to teach us how to make those ourselves.
Okay, that'd be great.
It's a promise.
And do you want tickets to the expo?
You bet I do. Thank you.
Good.
All right. We'll put you on hold, Carol. And there's another one I didn't forget.
And are you keeping track, Larry? Because
I have three pairs. Okay. Three pairs. Let's turn to Kathy in West Bend next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Shelley.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have a similar question. I would like to convert an area that has landscaping, crushed rock in my yard, to garden inexpensively. And I'm wondering if that's a good idea, how I could do it, possibly without making a raised bed. It's bordered by cement.
And what do you want to put in there?
Tomatoes, kind of the lasagna garden. Something close to home, herbs, tomatoes. I have a garden at the community garden, but it's handy to have something closer.
Oh,
when
yeah.
I'm cooking.
So you can step out and, you know, make a salad or something. Well,
yep.
The first thing I would do is get rid of the landscape fabric, the material, and the crushed rock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that'll probably be the biggest pain.
Yeah.
Then you're probably what's underneath there is compressed and not the best shape. So this year, if you can be patient, which is not one of my favorite words, I would be spending the entire year trying to add compost, organic material, working it into the soil, and spend the whole year trying to get the soil just pristine, good, nice chocolate cake soil.
Okay. Not much of a chance this year, then.
That would be the best thing to do. I mean, and this is from somebody who has skipped the steps herself and then had to go back and get rid of the weeds and had a horrible crop because I didn't follow my own advice, you know. it's like a parent. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yes.
If you do that and control weeds that may have been weed seeds that may have been sitting under there, because when you pull that mulch off, you're going to be bringing the soil back to sunlight. And weed seeds could have been sitting there forever, and they're going to want to start to grow. So this is your year for weed control and adding organic matter, breaking up the soil because it's going to be compacted from all the rocks sitting there. And then at the end of the year, I would again add newspaper, cardboard, some heavy-duty layers of straw, mulch, whatever. Let that break down over the winter, and next spring you'd have the best garden to plant in. In the meantime, you could do some small or large containers right outside your door.
That's what I was thinking.
You could have a couple whiskey barrels would tide you over for the entire year. You could do tomatoes and lettuce and peas in one whiskey barrel, salad greens, parsley in the other one while you're waiting, while you're being patient.
Yeah, lesson in patience.
Yeah, well, like I said, I learned it the hard way. I keep thinking one of the shows I want to do is Mistakes I Have Made. Be a long show.
And Kathy, do you want to, are you going to the Garden Expo?
Absolutely. I would love tickets.
All right. We'll put you on hold. And thank you very much for calling.
Good luck.
Oh, there's another. I remembered again. Let's go to...
I'm proud of you, Larry.
Yeah. Let's go to Judy in Verona. Hi, Judy.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I have a question about growing sweet potatoes in Wisconsin. I'm wondering what the success rate is and if there's anything special you need to do.
You can do it. I've talked to a number of gardeners that do it. The ones that have had success are living in nice, warm, fertile valleys.
I see.
That's about as far as my knowledge goes. There's a, in fact, one of the guys I want to get on the show runs Middlebury Hills CSA.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than give you wrong information, unless Larry knows more about this, I would actually recommend that you check out his website and see if he would give you advice personally. It's a great CSA in Barneveld.
Okay.
It's called Middlebury Hills CSA, and they've been growing sweet potatoes successfully for years.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
And all right. I would follow his advice. But he, again, he lives in a nice valley that the soil is absolutely black. I think they're almost in a different zone than I'm in. And do you want tickets?
Even though they're close by. Yeah, do you want tickets?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Judy, you hang on. We'll get you tickets, and now we've gone through five pairs.
All right.
We're zipping along now, Shelley. On to Jeff in Winneconne. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Sherry. What I'm going to do is I'm going to move a rhubarb plant. And I want, you know, I was up at the botanical garden in Green Bay, and their rhubarb was almost as big as my wrist, you know. And I want to know, how do I make my rhubarb that big?
Well, there are, okay, number one, there are a number of different cultivars and varieties, and there are some very old ones. Also, when it's that, there are also, I should, there are some ornamental varieties that tend to get bigger like that, too, which can add to the confusion. I don't know that you want it that big if you're going to eat it, because that does tend to be a little bit tougher. So, you know, think about how you're going to use it. If you're using it for ornamental purposes, yeah, you know, look for a variety that promises that.
No, I'm using it for jam.
Okay. Okay, because I find that you lose a lot of the flavor the bigger it gets. You know, it gets more tart, too, and it gets woody.
Hmm, okay.
But as far as one of the tricks is rhubarb is a very heavy feeder. So before you move it, first of all, again, we've been saying this all morning already, make sure the new bed is well prepared and that you've incorporated a lot of organic material.
Like poop.
Yes, but composted poop.
Okay.
Not fresh.
Oh, okay.
You will burn it. You will burn the heck out of your plant.
Cow pies.
No.
Okay.
Not unless, I mean, we're talking, when we say composted, if it's cow manure, it's crumbly. It doesn't smell. It looks more like soil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you can incorporate that in ahead of time. Again, even, you know, a couple of months ahead of time, like actually the year before would be ideal, that it's a weed-free bed. And then when you plant into it, it's going to need regular mulch of composted manure around it.
Yes. And okay.
People forget to feed the rhubarb.
Okay.
And just looking, Valentine rhubarb is probably considered the sweetest of the rhubarbs if you're looking for pies or maybe jams.
Yep.
Valentine is a pretty good one.
But I don't think it's going to get as big as your wrist. And
no,
again, I don't
not.
Think that's the ideal you're looking for.
No. Oh,
okay, good.
No, absolutely not.
And I do want tickets.
All right, you remembered. Thank you.
Oh, good. Hold on. We'll put you on hold, Jeff. Ah, somebody remembered. All right, that's good. Somebody remembered. Here is Liz in West Bend next. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Larry. I love your show.
Thank you.
I had a question about bush beans.
Okay.
I grew bush beans last year in a raised bed, and I only planted the plants one time, and they continually produce throughout the season. And now I want to grow the same kind of plants again, and I can't remember the name of that variety.
Oh, boy. Okay, do you remember the company?
No, that's the problem.
Oh, no.
I don't remember anything about it. I just picked up these seeds at, you know, some store, and they just, throughout the entire season, I just got beans the whole time.
Well.
And you don't, oh, boy, that's, I mean, I wouldn't begin to tell you what to try. There's lots of good bush beans. I'm a big fan of heirloom varieties.
Mm-hmm.
You could even make a call to Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa, and see if they would recommend their favorite bush bean.
Okay.
You know, or another company that would probably be able to help you, maybe recommending a variety, would be Johnny's Select Seeds.
Uh-huh.
They're both, then they have some heirloom varieties too, but they both, I think, have reputable people working for them, which would help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's lots of places you can call, but none of them are going to know where you bought those. I'm sorry
right,
to say.
Right, and I don't need exact particular variety again.
Right.
I just want
something
some variety that continually produces.
Well, and basically you tell them point blank that's what you want. Because I couldn't begin to tell you which one would be, you know, my favorite.
Derby Green was an All-American winner.
Okay, that's always a good start. Anything that's an AAS winner is a good start.
And it's so it might be one to think about. Derby Green Bush Bean.
What are you looking through, Larry?
I'm just paging through Jung Seed Catalog.
Oh, okay. So a local producer too. So
yeah. So
okay.
I would take a look at that.
And actually, this time of year, I mean, the seed catalogs are coming in the mail, you know, left and right. Browse through a couple, maybe.
Try a couple different types.
Yeah.
Varieties.
Do a
sure.
couple small test plots because then write down because you may discover a couple new ones and you may realize, gee, I want to plant both of these for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really good about writing stuff down, but last year it was so busy.
I've had the same problem. Then there was the year that my dog and my son were helping me, and after I planted everything, I turned around and they both had all the stakes, the plant labels in their little hands and their paws. So,
that's actually something that happened to me last year, too.
See?
So that compounds the problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you love your children and your pets, but there are days.
Right, definitely.
Are you planning to go to the expo?
Yeah, actually, I'll be in Madison then. So.
Excellent.
All right, yeah. We are putting you on hold. And
Thank you. We'll
get some information. And I'm hoping all these people who we're giving tickets to will come and see me at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday and ask some more questions and visit a bit. Let's go to Linda in La Crosse next. Well, we'll get to Linda. Hold on there a minute. We'll get to you in just a second. I want to remind everyone that our guest today is Shelley Ryan. Shelley is host and producer of Wisconsin Gardener on Wisconsin Public Television and is the driving force behind Wisconsin Public Television's Garden Expo, Friday, February 12th, Saturday, February 13th, and Sunday, February 14th. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you along here on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller with Shelley Ryan. Linda in La Crosse is up next, so we go right straight to Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to ask a little more about the mulching and composting.
Sure.
I have a pile of grass clippings that I saved up from over the years, and I want to use it on my vegetable garden. But my question is, that has herbicide in it, when they sprayed the grass and so forth. Does that decompose? And I don't want to put herbicide, you know, on my vegetables.
You know, to be safe, I wouldn't use it.
Okay.
I don't know what the life is in it.
Yeah, I have never been able to get an answer about that. And I'm a master gardener, and I talked about it in our class one time. And nobody seemed to know for sure if those herbicides would break down.
Well, or how long they take to break down. I don't, you know, and again, I think what happens is if they haven't done specific research on it, you know, they hesitate, the extension hesitates to give an answer, which I think is fair. You don't want to give a wrong answer.
Right.
And I don't either.
Okay.
I would hesitate. I wouldn't be using it.
Okay. Then I'm glad I asked. And then the other question is about, you talked about doing the lasagna thing and putting down cardboard. Did you mean, and I never thought of that, you know, like corrugated cardboard?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Like I said, be sure to watch, now you're going to have to remember this for 6 months or so, but be sure to watch my show in August because another master gardener has perfected this into a fine art, and he lives on sand, and he has tomatoes that are 8 feet tall.
Oh,
so he's created an art form here of using cardboard and different forms of organic material. I mean, you can use anything on top of the cardboard that breaks down. He actually goes running around looking for refrigerator boxes.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
But he said, yeah, don't take his.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So if you live near Spring Green, don't take any refrigerator. But I mean, it's a great idea. I mean, you know, we go out and we get little pieces of cardboard. Why not take, you know, TV boxes or something? But
sure. And we can't recycle cardboard here.
There you go.
It breaks down.
Right. But you have to do it the fall before because it takes a long time to break down.
Yes.
Yeah, but I bet it does.
He even uses pizza boxes.
Oh.
So that's a lot of pizza.
Okay. Well, thanks for the help on one of my two questions.
Oh, you're welcome. And tickets?
Tickets?
No, I won't be able to go.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Linda. Well, we still have tickets to go then. Yogi in Belleville, we go to you now. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. How are you this afternoon?
Just great.
I had a question about some bittersweet. I had heard from a friend that there's a bittersweet variety out there now that you don't have to have a male and a female. Is that true?
You know, I think I think I've heard that too, but boy, I can't verify. Larry is flipping through the catalog while we speak.
Yeah.
Because usually you need a male and a female.
Right.
While Larry's flipping here, I know you have to be careful because there are some that are considered more, Asian varieties that are easier to grow, but I've heard that there are some issues with some invasive issues.
Oh, okay.
And so that might be why they're not highly recommended.
Okay.
But I don't know, Larry, are you coming up with anything better than that there?
I haven't found anything yet, but I tell you what, I'll probably find something. So stay listening. And by the way, would you like tickets for the expo?
Oh, I'd love to.
Excellent.
My husband knows there's more than corn and alfalfa to grow.
Well, then bring him along. He'll learn.
I know. I'm going to make him go.
All right. We've got you on hold. And Jim will get your information.
I do know. I did a segment at Star Valley Flowers near Soldiers Grove, and they grow a lot of bittersweet for use in dried flower arrangements and things like that. And that there was an issue with the type they were growing being somewhat more invasive, and it may be that that's the type. So I don't want to recommend it because that might not be the best thing to say. But I know that the typical kind, you know, the native, the kind growing around here is male and female.
Yeah, and that's so far what I'm Autumn Revolution, the first American bittersweet that doesn't require a pollinator.
That could be. Does it say if that's, though, is that an Asian variety or?
It doesn't say. So it's one that you'd want to research.
Yeah, do a little reading.
Autumn Revolution bittersweet. That would be one to at least do some research on.
I could be completely off base on this, but I remember some issues and people raising a few flags. So, you know, Larry, I got to mention this too before you go to a quick call. That I love being called the driving force behind the Garden Expo, but there are hundreds of people that help organize this event put it together. I wish I could take credit, but I'd be exhausted and probably in bed. So credit to all of the volunteers and all of the staff here at Wisconsin Public Television who really operate this thing and make me just stand there and smile.
It's a
big event. It's a team effort.
It is that. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
Kent at Oconomowoc, we're on to you now. Hi, Kent.
Hi. Say, I was wondering, are there any edible perennial grains or beans I could plant?
Perennial what?
Beans?
Edible grains or beans, perennials.
Perennial.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm thinking. The clock is ticking.
Hmm.
I cannot think of any grains or beans.
There are a lot of perennial grains and beans, but they work well in Florida or places like that.
Right.
Yeah. I want to convert my yard to an edible yard.
Ah. Okay, well, I can recommend some perennial fruits. I mean, not trees either. I mean, but I don't know if that's the direction you want to go.
Well, I want a source of protein.
Okay.
Perennial.
Right, so like a soybean or something like that. You know, off the top of my head, I cannot think of anything.
Can't think of a single one.
Not a source of protein. Protein would be nuts. You might want to look at... you know, there are hazelnut.
Yeah.
Okay. And,
those are easy to grow here in Wisconsin.
Good.
And it's a native. You might have some insect issues. I know what mine have. When I open them, they have little holes in them. So you might have to look at some organic control. But hazelnut is very easily grown here, and it's a beautiful shrub to grow, and it's protein.
Good.
And, you know, I bet you if you come to Garden Expo, you're probably going to get all kinds of...
and one of the hot phrases this year is permaculture, which is exactly...
Right.
That's exactly what you're describing.
That's what I want to do.
That's... I'm looking through to see if there's any classes on it. If not, I will be featuring some segments on my show, but I'll bet you...
There's going to be people right there.
Right, because it is kind of the hot topic. It's the hot green topic. I'm almost positive there'll be somebody there on permaculture. The flyer will be coming out in the paper, too, with all of the seminars, or you can go to our website and look at all of the seminars.
Okay, well, I'll be there.
Okay,
well, listen, how about tickets?
Great.
All right, well, hang on. Jim will get your information. And there's another one. I think we've got eight gone now.
All right.
Something like that. Let's go to Lyric in Blanchardville. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
A couple questions. But first, that man that just called ahead, would amaranth be a perennial grain that has protein?
Ah, yes, thank you.
Okay.
Now, the only problem is it's a little bit weedy and can return wherever it feels like.
But, okay.
Yes, first caller, if you're listening, amaranth, and it's in very high, it's almost considered a perfect protein. It will reseed. It's not a perennial. It recedes.
But it recedes.
But it recedes at will. I'm still getting rid of some. It has wandered all over, but it comes high, short, tall, ornamental. You can also eat the leaves. Excellent idea. Thank you.
My question is this. I have a two friends, husband-wife team, that are wonderful people, but he sprays his vegetables and his potatoes with horrible sprays and powder to kill the potato beetles, and it kills bees. What would be a gentle method to encourage him to not do that? And do you have any suggestions?
Oh, a gentle method?
Well, or a political, you know.
one of the things we were talking about earlier in terms of the potatoes, planting times on potatoes is pretty critical given the life cycle of the bugs that attack them. So if he plants later, he plants and misses, he will miss.
That first stage.
That first stage. And then he's not going to have them.
Okay.
So then he's gotten rid of half of the problem to deal with.
Is there any kind of healthy thing he can do to the potato beetles should they show up?
Oh, you mean as far as an organic control?
Yes.
I'm sure there is. I'm not thinking of what specifically it would be.
Okay.
Stay listening. Other than picking them and throwing them in soapy water.
Okay.
Which is a lot of work.
Yeah, they were just covered. I mean, they covered as potatoes. They were really intense.
Well, why not floating row covers?
Okay. All righty.
Sure.
Because they're not. It's not like a squash plant that needs, you know, pollination from a bee. So
okay.
Yeah, floating row covers would keep.
That's great.
Physical. They can't get to them.
Great.
And they're cheap.
Yeah.
The floating row covers are really cheap.
Yeah, and you can reuse them for a couple of years if you're not too rough on them, too, so they can last for quite a while.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Do you want to come to Expo, by the way?
I would love to.
Oh, good.
We keep going, wait.
All right, we've got you on hold, and we'll go from there. And Dan in Plymouth next. Hi, Dan.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Can I have two tickets, too, by the way?
You will be able to, yes.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, thank you. And I got some suggestions about the guy with the rhubarb.
Yeah.
I got three suggestions. The guy with the potatoes, the lady that was just on about potatoes.
Yeah.
I have been using like a grub powder or grub pellets that they use for lawns to kill the grubs. I put them in the ground mixed with the potatoes, and I have no trouble with potato beetles.
Okay.
And number two, grass clippings. I have rototilled grass clippings in my garden for 40 years, just about every year. Same thing with the leaves. I try to get it in fall if possible with the grass clippings because of no weeds. And horse manure. I had an old German neighbor. He used to put a bushel basket full of horse manure every fall when the plants would die down, a whole bushel basket on his each a rhubarb plant in the fall.
And he'd get, and that would, well, I would assume he would have had it composted a little bit, but if not, maybe it'll work. I would go for composting.
Yeah, you don't want fresh. But I mean, that's the thing, that's such a heavy feeder.
Yeah, such
you
a...
know, use old horse manure, and I think the more the merrier, as long as it's composted.
Dan, we got you on hold, and Jim will be with you. Here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Shelley Ryan, host and producer of The Wisconsin Gardener on Wisconsin Public Television. Great to have her along talking about the show and talking about Garden Expo, which is coming up the 12th through the 14th, as we've been saying here. Leanne in Heartland emailed in and said, she loves Garden Expo and wonders when I'll be speaking. I did mention that earlier, but there's no time like the present to mention it again. I'll be on with Bob Tomisch at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, and I hope everybody comes. Please come. It'll be a lot of fun. We've got lots of prizes and surprises, and we'll be answering garden questions. So there you have it. And Craig and Butternut has a question, and I wonder if Craig would come all the way from Butternut to go to Garden Expo.
Hey, show me anything green and growing anywhere else in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I got lots of conifers up here.
Oh, that's a good point.
But no, my wife is actually, my questions are sort of out of order. Larry, you just answered my second question because I wanted to know what you were going to shamelessly plug for your talks. Thank you for answering that. But the other one is, yeah, we've got loads of apple trees up here, and they do pretty well, and I never use chemicals on them at all.
That's a challenge. Good for you.
Yeah, and it's, as a matter of fact, I'm enjoying a piece of apple pie right now that we froze.
Oh, lucky stiff.
from our trees. They're fantastic. But she is going to be going to that the expo.
Good for her.
And the thing is that are there talks about taking care of apple trees and things like that, without chemicals and all that?
Well, I'm flipping through the list as fast as I can. The easier way to look is to go to WPT.org.
Okay.
And then there's a button to click on Garden Expo, click on the expo. And then there's a list of seminars.
Okay.
Because there's like 100 seminars going on. So,
okay.
You know, I'm flipping as fast as I can.
Well, it's her 50th birthday tomorrow.
And, oh, excellent!
So I was going to go and order tickets online for a present, and then I heard this thing on the.
We still have 9 pairs of tickets left. So you get, we'll now have 8 pairs.
Yeah. Well, she to answer your question, Shelley. Yeah, she absolutely. This is serendipitous because she and her sister. Her sister lives in Fort Atkinson, they're going to be going to that.
See, I told you, Larry. People come from far away to see both of us.
she loves that show. So,
and now I don't see anything on apples in particular, but I happen to know that all of the UW Extension experts will be at their booth right behind the Wisconsin Public Television booth. That would be one group of people I would ask about your apples.
Okay, it's just a miracle to watch these trees every year. We had an absolutely bumper crop this year, and
Well, see, I'm jealous. We don't spray ours either down here closer to Madison, and most of the apples ended up on the ground.
Well,
I'm blaming my husband. That's what I'm going to do.
We have blemishes on them. They're not. You know what you'd get number one quality that you'd see in a store. But boy, they sure are good for pies and applesauce.
Yeah.
Well, and one of my plans for a new show is going to be to get a couple organic apple growers on the show and see what are some simple things that us little home growers can do to make it our lives easier.
And
so it's on the list.
And Bob Tomish might have some advice on that, because I'm sure he's talked about that on my show in the past. So
he'll be with Larry on Saturday.
Yeah, your wife and your sister-in-law come, have them come over at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
You might enjoy it yourself.
Well, that might be a little stretch. I think this is girl time here. I think that...
You know, they do have tractors, too.
Oh, cool. There you go.
Well, listen, I'm going to put you on hold. Jim will get your information, Craig.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. All right, so what did I say? We have eight. Eight left.
And Larry, real quickly, we still have to mention some of the workshops. And now my workshop is
filled.
Mention
some workshops. Yeah, can't go to yours.
Sorry, but you can come and watch. I'll wave. But other things like our veggie leaf casting, where you take kind of concrete and you make like a small bird bath out of a decorative leaf. Making your own herb seasonings, making a mosaic bird bath, making a mosaic garden address stone or stepping stone. Mosaic glass wind chimes, making a mosaic garden stick. A lot of these are done either by Shake Rag Alley, which I go to regularly, wonderful instructors, or by the Vinery. Mosaic picture frames. I wonder if I can take that. Oh, no, I'm supposed to be working. Okay, never mind. Making a hyper tufa planter bowl. All of these do not say class full, so these can be registered for online or at the expo. And there, you walk out of there with a finished project.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, you got to pay extra for these, but you walk out of there with something that you could then turn around and give as a Valentine's present.
You're so smart.
I know, it's amazing.
Let's go to Sue in Madison. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Shelley.
Hi.
Hearing about gardening makes me feel like spring's just around the corner.
Just keep the fingers crossed.
But I was wondering, are there any herbs that can be grown indoors, you know, in the winter, with just natural light, you know, things you can just set in the window that grow pretty well?
Some of the things that I've had success with year after year are rosemary and bay leaf, actually.
Oh, okay.
You know, they don't do a lot of active growing, but they don't die.
Okay.
Do not try basil. Just don't even bother. And with both of those, rosemary in particular, you have to watch out for things like whitefly and moisture. You know, it comes from the Mediterranean. So you need to keep kind of the moisture levels even. Keep the soil wet, but maybe have it sit on a layer of rocks.
Oh, okay.
But it can actually grow and even flower indoors.
Oh, that would be fun.
My bay leaf just sits there, but it sits there and grows, and then you've got fresh bay leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the two that year after year, they sit in
work
the west
well.
Window, so it's not even that much light.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do well with parsley, chives.
Mm-hmm.
A real good trick with chives, in fact, is if you're growing them outside, just around fall, cut off a chunk of your chives, put them in a small pot, leave them outside until like after the first frost and the first snowfall, then bring them in the house, and they will start to sprout for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's foolproof.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'll try those because I want to get something going now after hearing all this stuff about gardening.
I know. You just start to crave anything that's green to eat.
Are you going to Expo?
Oh, I would love to go if you have any tickets left.
We still do.
We still have a couple left. So, Sue, we'll put you on hold and we'll be back. Bill wonders if you could suggest a hot radish. He said he's tired of mild radishes.
Okay. So, hot like in spicy. Well, the one that comes to mind is German beer radish. It's actually an heirloom radish, very old-fashioned variety, a little bit bigger than the ones we use for salads. And it's made to be peeled and eaten like in the bar with beer and salted in beer. If you don't peel it, it's going to be even spicier and hot.
Yes.
And I think it's a very fun radish just because of the history, you know.
I like that. And Mark wonders, Mark has a large garden with different moisture levels and soil types. What are the negative effects of tilling the soil when it's wet or moist?
Don't do that.
No, don't do it.
You create something called plow pan, which is basically destroying your soil structure and creating bricks. And as we all know, those are for building, not gardening. You want to, the best rule of thumb, one of the best lessons I ever learned is take a handful of your soil, squeeze it. If it crumbles, kind of like cake, go ahead and till. If it stays in a clump, or worse yet, if moisture comes out of it, put it back, go back in the house, and read your seed catalogs. It's too wet to till.
And Dave and Nina took a class with you at Woodlanders the last two seasons.
Oh, fun.
Delightful classes. He says the bunnies have been hitting his raspberry vines, especially the last two winters. Should I fence them in? Repellents?
Fence
is the best.
Anything else is going to have to be reapplied. I mean, that's why they make something called chicken wire or even rabbit fencing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm real worried this year because I was having knee surgery right about when the first snowfall was dumping on us, so we didn't cage anything.
Ooh.
I know. I mean, so, you know, anyone with a spare tree, come to my yard.
He also wondered how long an asparagus patch will be productive.
About 15 years easily if you take good care of it. Oh, and in fact, we're going to talk about growing asparagus in April with Lisa Johnson on my show.
Perfect.
Best myth that don't put salt on asparagus.
Right.
Everybody seems to think, oh, that's what you do to control weeds. No, just like plowing wet soil, salt literally destroys your soil.
Do you put any nutrition on it or fertilizer on it?
And you can put fertilizer on it. You can put compost on it, organic material, anything but salt.
Let's turn to Mariette in Cedarburg. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question regarding the ideal time for planting potatoes. We've planted them after we've rototilled when the soil is at the right, you know, consistency for rototilling, and still have had problems with the seed potatoes rotting. Is there an ideal time, or I know somebody talked about a later time in Wisconsin. What would you suggest?
Larry, you just talked about this after talking with Phil Pelletieri.
Later planting.
I mean, even though the soil seems ready.
If the soil, go for an early maturing variety and go for a later planting, okay? I'm trying to remember the exact timing on this, and I don't remember it.
Okay.
And it was on my show yesterday.
Okay.
If you go back to my show.
On the website?
On the website, you could listen to it. And it came up, a couple times, so... and we talked about it.
I will try your website. I didn't hear it yesterday, but I can try the website.
Okay.
Because you also avoid then the potato beetle issue too. So
by planting later.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I do have a suggestion for the person just wanting a hot radish.
Yeah.
Also, the black radish is hot.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the black radish is hot.
Those are quite hot.
Very good.
And do you want to go to the expo?
Oh, we'd love to. We go every year. It's fantastic.
Oh, good.
Hang on. We'll put you on hold, and Jim will be there to take your information. And let's see. We've got Dee is thinking about planting two honeyberry bushes and wondering if you have any experience with them, if it's worth the effort and space.
Do we know what?
Cerulea?
Yes. What zone is she in?
It doesn't say where she's calling, where she emailed from.
Okay. This is one of the new experimental fruits. I believe Dale Secker at Carindale Farm is experimenting with this. If I were her, I would check out Carindale Farm on the website.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Oregon, Wisconsin. In fact, I'm doing a segment with him on one of his experimental fruit, Aronia, which is quite a success. And he can tell you if Lonicera honeyberry is worth the effort in Wisconsin or not, because he's experimenting with all sorts of these alternative fruits, how hardy they are, how productive they are, and do they taste good?
Perfect. Roger emailed us and said you could see pictures of lasagna gardening in the process at myspace.com/ourfarmwi. And he says American bittersweet, as I had mentioned, is not invasive, but most of the others are.
That's what I was. Okay, I was on the right track, just couldn't remember which was which. Thank you, Roger.
And for the edible landscaping perennial protein sources, look to native edibles, yes, nuts, and there's a book, Edible Plants of North America, that he likes.
Oh, okay, that would include things like groundnut, which is kind of a native wild plant, which could be used.
So let's turn to Bill in Evansville now. Bill, hello.
Hello. First of all, I'd really like some of the expo tickets.
Okay, we can do that for you.
Good. And then I've got two questions. The first one involves growing shallots, leeks, and garlics in a container. And if you plant them in the fall, how that works, and when you should plant them in the spring. And I do have a pot in the garage that I planted in garlic in October that is now frozen solid. Is that going to actually work?
Frozen solid worries me a little bit because that was the first thing I thought of when you said containers. Generally, you know, when we plant bulbs in the ground, I mean, the ground freezes. But we, you know, when we plant garlic outside, we put a layer of mulch over it. I don't think it's frozen solid.
Well, I don't know how solid it is. I mean, it's a lot warmer than it is outside, but
yeah.
It freezes.
I mean, garlic, you know, all of those garlic, any bulb crop needs to go through cooling, and it needs to be planted in the cool season to develop its roots. I don't think it's going to work, but hey, you've got nothing to lose by,
give it a shot.
Yeah.
And,
let us know, though.
And leeks, are they going to work in the spring if you plant them?
Leeks are a spring crop. I think shallots are a bulb. Yeah, shallots are a bulb.
Yeah.
I mean, what am I blanking on? I believe those should have been planted in the fall.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm not sure about that. Don't take my word for that. I wouldn't want to give you wrong directions because shallots are more in the onion family than a garlic. Garlic is the only one of those that really is a fall crop. So shallots probably are a spring crop like an onion bulb. Okay. Leeks, you can either do by seed or by like starter sets.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest trick, you know, people always tell me you can do onions and leeks by seed. I don't get very big plants by it. Maybe I'm just not doing it early enough. I tend to use the starter sets because somebody else has done the hard work for me.
Okay.
The biggest trick, especially with leeks, is you plant them in a trench. Okay. As they grow, you slowly fill in the soil around them. That's how you get the tall, white stalk.
Okay. It would be possible to do that in a container then also? In some way?
Yeah, you probably could, as long as it's a deep enough container.
Right. You just plant them down low and then just keep adding soil to it.
Right, right. But make sure, you know, it's a big enough container.
Okay.
Because years ago I tried to plant Brussels sprouts in a container and that didn't go real well.
All right. And another question that I had, my second one, was regarding we're across the street from a field that's usually in soybeans or corn and they end up spraying Roundup and such on it. Is there any intelligent way to protect your plants from the drift of that?
Not really. Nicely asking them not to do it on a windy day.
That's about the only, I don't know how I should do it other than, well.
I mean, it's like we have some, like a cloth, that a frost cloth sort of thing. That protects the plants, when it is cold, like in the fall.
Yeah, but water, moisture, things like that can get through. Yeah.
Okay, so something like that doesn't seem like it would work.
I mean, the only literally, if you knew the days they were planting to put up a physical barrier, putting up, you know, cardboard, something like that.
Yeah.
Or like asking them if they could be considerate and try to avoid it on windy days.
Okay.
Which, you know, it never hurts to ask.
All right. Yeah.
And we'll put you on hold, Bill, for tickets.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. And Mary in Danville, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I was wondering if there's a type of ginger that can be grown in Wisconsin.
Ginger.
Now you're talking the wild ginger or the culinary ginger?
Culinary.
It is not hardy outside.
Okay, so, but it could be hothouse grown then?
It could be grown in a container year-round.
Uh-huh.
Basically, in fact, you can get a piece of the root probably at most grocery stores or I would prefer
organic.
Thank you. That was the word that was not coming out of my mouth. I've grown it a number of times. Again, it needs a big enough pot because the root is what's going to grow and
sure.
spread.
Mm-hmm.
I've got turmeric growing in my living room right now from
okay.
the root. So you'd go to Olbrich and take a look at even their variegated ginger plants.
Okay.
You
mm-hmm.
duplicate that climate. It needs warm, moist conditions in the winter. In the summer, you can put it outside and even use it as an ornamental. It does not need full sun in the summer. That would actually burn it. So
okay.
treat it kind of like one of your woodland shade plants in
sure.
the summer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And are you interested in going to Expo?
I would love to.
Excellent.
Yes.
Hold on. We'll put you on hold. Sally in Wayland, Minnesota, I want to go to you. Hi, Sally. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Jim. I'm calling because I heard the lady who wanted an organic solution to her potato beetles.
Yes.
And I called and I talked to Phil yesterday, and he said that you could plant late. And, Larry, you were very intrigued by that idea. And, yes, I've done that. That works. And you can also plant early. And by planting early, I mean as soon as the ground is workable. As soon as the ground is workable, you can plant your potatoes. 1 year, I got them in March, if you can believe that. And yes, you will get a frost, and it will hurt the tips. But if you know the frost is coming, you can cover them with dirt. But even if they get nipped by frost, they'll come again. Just cut them off. So you can plant late. You can plant early, too. Like I said, March, that's pretty early. Then, he said, for organic, the organic solution is something called spinosad. And I don't have the correct spelling on this because I just heard him say it.
Spinosad.
Yeah,
yes.
And I'm sure that you could get that at Jung's. Jung's is an amazing place. The people are very helpful, and that's around Madison. But if you're up by me, by Whalen, I'll be selling it at my greenhouse.
All right, spinosad.
Yeah.
Sally, do you want to come to Expo?
I would love to. I would love to. The last time I was there was before I started this greenhouse. I haven't done anything since but the greenhouse.
Well, if you want to come, we'll put you on hold and we'll get you a couple tickets.
Oh, I'd love to. Yes, please.
All right. We've got you on hold, and there you go. And let's turn to Lowell in Madison. Hi, Lowell.
Hi, Lowell. Hi there. I have a peony tree that I got. Actually, I got it from my brother-in-law, so I better get it to thrive. We got it about 4 years ago. The first year we had one blossom. We did move, and so I moved it over here, and it's standing here alone. It blooms. It doesn't bloom. It grows every summer, goes to about a foot and a half, and no blossoms.
What side of the house do you have it on?
Actually, we have a sunroom, and so it's on the northwest corner, an extension beyond the house. So it gets sun early morning, and then from 2 o'clock and the rest of the day it gets sun.
Okay, first thing I think is it needs a lot more sun.
Yeah.
That's why you're not getting the blossoms. Move it to an east side if you can so that it can get full sun. Because they are hardy here.
And we're running out of time. Do you want Expo tickets?
I would appreciate it.
All right, Lowell, we'll put you on hold, and Jim will take care of that. He's been a busy guy this hour. But I wanted to just remind everybody, Shelley and all the great folks at Wisconsin Public Television and people who volunteer spend a lot of time getting ready for Garden Expo, and since she's here, I do want to mention it again. February 12th from 4 to 9, February 13th from 8 to 6, and February 14th, that Sunday, from 10 to 4 at the Alliant Energy Center Exhibition Hall. A public television and cooperative extension put this on, and everybody just does a lot of work, and tell you what, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Come and see me and Bob Tomish at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. We'll probably talk about this some more during the week. But all you guys that got tickets, I hope you show up for that 10 o'clock program because it's going to be a lot of fun. Shelley, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It's always fun. Shelley Ryan, host and producer of The Wisconsin Gardener on Wisconsin Public Television. Take a look at that WPT website and find out about the shows that she has coming up. She's got some wonderful shows, new shows for this year. And thanks for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.